Disclaimer. The views and opinions you hear expressed by the participants in this show are not the views of AnimeNewsNetwork.com. The show tapes live some weeks on Thursdays at 5 p.m. Pacific Time. Check my Twitter feed, ANNZAC, for more. Enjoy the show. Disclaimer. The views and opinions you hear expressed by the participants in this show are not the views of AnimeNewsNetwork.com. Enjoy the show. Everybody, welcome to AnCast. I'm Zach Birchie. Jacob's here.
I am here.
We're back from Japan.
Mm-hmm.
Yep, still awake.
Yeah, I fixed my jet lag pretty quick, actually, so...
Yeah, I dealt with it pretty fast. Like, I'm still... Like, my schedule's a little messed up still. Like, I'm sleeping a little later than I used to.
You never really got used to the Japan time because we didn't sleep so good.
No, I didn't sleep good in Japan at all. So like,
the crunchy futon.
The apartment that we had was nice, but the bed in the apartment, like, Japanese folks tend to not sleep on beds that are as comfortable as the ones that I am used to, or as soft as the ones that I'm used to. They have a whole futon thing there. Like, if there's a mattress, it's harder than you might expect. Mm-hmm. And so we were on pretty rough mattress, and I was not. And like, I have, like I need, like, a fan noise going. You know, I'm used to the white noise. I'm one of these people that needs a white noise thing going, and we didn't really have that. So, I didn't sleep too good. But I'm okay now. Everything's fine. We had a lot of work to do this week, so it's a good thing. Because mm-hmm. things did not slow down.
When we got back, it's like...
Yeah.
It hasn't stopped. It's like I'm stuck in a river heading for a waterfall, and the waterfall is called Preview Guide.
Yeah, yeah. This week starts Preview Guide. Preview Guide starts tomorrow. Today's Friday. We're taping this today because we wanted to talk about this movie, but
yes.
Tomorrow begins Preview Guide, spring preview, and probably the biggest season we've had in...
Ever?
I mean, look, you could say ever. No one likes to say ever because then later, what if I find out later that it was like, okay, but it's Attack on Titan and My Hero Academia and like.
Combined volume, not necessarily just anticipation because, yeah, if you're talking like adjusted for inflation, maybe it's not the most anticipated.
Yeah.
But it is like volume plus anticipation.
Yeah.
Because it's all this anticipated stuff plus more stuff gets made now. So it's.
Yeah.
I would say the biggest, yes.
Yeah. It's a big deal. And so that starts tomorrow morning for us, Saturday. We'll have it up on the site right away. You'll have, like, seven people telling you whether or not Attack on Titan is any good. But, you know, that's
spoilers,
how it goes.
Probably is.
It's probably good.
And probably bad if you don't like Attack on Titan, but then you weren't going to watch it anyways.
I mean, you know, it's only 12 episodes, right? So,
yeah.
Not that much of a time commitment.
We're going to get through, like, two more manga volumes, and then they'll still be behind.
It's a very talented and active animator, Tom Romaine, who is on Twitter. And yeah. He was basically saying, hey, this is because there's talent is extremely overworked in Japan, there's an overproduction problem, and that's why you get 12 episodes of Attack on Titan. I bet it was like, I'm hoping that those 12 episodes look great, and it's like a condensed.
Could we have
like they condense the anime?
Could we have
or the
like,
manga? The manga.
Could we have like three fewer light novel things like Zero Kara, whatever, and Clockwork Planet, and just get more episodes of Attack on Titan and My Hero Academia? Like, could we do that? Maybe.
I mean. No. Nah, that's kind of how it goes now. So, yeah, look forward to that, I guess. There's a bunch of content up on the site. If you need to catch up on Attack on Titan or My Hero Academia, go to Anime News Network. We have a couple of very helpful features that'll catch you up on those seasons. Not that that much happens in the first season of My Hero Academia. That show moves pretty... They take, like, a chapter at a time, right? It's like...
It's adapted at the speed, like, that Pierrot adapts things. It's just as animated better.
Right.
But it is the speed. Like, it's not like a Bones Shonen adaptation. Like, there's been a many Bones Shonen adaptations, and they're usually, like, compressed or readapted or stuff. Like, this is extremely faithful, glacially paced. It just looks good.
Yeah. And that show looks great. My Hero Academia looks so good.
It looks really good.
Yeah. I was rewatching a little bit of it.
It's fun. It's a real easy watch. I like it. I enjoy that show, but I'm just not, like, super in love with it because it is, like, shonen.jpg. In a good, like, it's very high resolution shonen.jpg, but it's not, like, my favorite thing in the world because it's, like, yeah, I know the shonen beats. Like, I mean,
all the advertisements for season two are clearly a tournament arc.
Yes. It's very shonen. Like, it's, and that's not a negative.
No, that's fine.
I like things that shock me a bit more, you know, and this is comfort food. This is great. You know?
Tournament arcs can be a lot of fun.
Yes, they can.
Really enjoyable.
I don't doubt that it's going to be fun.
I watched several Naruto tournament arcs that I thought were entertaining.
Yeah.
Remember when Rock Lee, like, was fighting and then he took off it turns out he had weights on his hands and legs. Remember that?
What?
It was novel at the time. It was novel.
But that was in Dragon Ball fucking Z, though.
I didn't watch Dragon Ball. It was novel to me.
Okay.
I never got into Dragon Ball.
It was...
Ever.
Yeah.
Did you watch that show?
I'm just saying, taking training weights off is like... That's cliche.
Well, I liked it.
Okay. Anyway.
It's an example of a memorable tournament moment that's apparently in every tournament.
Yeah. It's in Yu Yu Hakusho, too, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure. Dude, there's a movie that came out this week that we've been talking about and waiting for a long time. Boss Justin Baby.
Show. Whoa, Boss Baby.
No.
I'm sorry, how could I have gotten that wrong? My bad.
We saw it last night. We got the exact animated film. We got early tickets to Boss Baby last night.
And I hear that cookies are foreclosers.
Yeah. Gun in mouth. Yeah. So Ghost in the Shell came out. Rupert Sanders film.
His previous credit is just Snow White and the Huntsman.
The only thing he's directed is Snow White and the Huntsman, which everyone was apparently so impressed with that there was a mad scramble to get this guy attached
to something. So thinking back, so I only saw that movie once in theaters. It's not like I revisited
Boss Baby?
Snow White and the Huntsman.
Snow White and the Huntsman. Sorry, I keep thinking we're talking about Boss Baby.
Why would we be talking about Boss Baby? Why would anyone
on Anime God's News Green Network? Earth it's a cartoon.
Be talking about Boss Baby. Anyway.
The hit new anime. Boss
Baby. So Snow White and the Huntsman. Like, I only saw it once, so it's not like I should remember anything. But I do remember set pieces from that. I do remember how it looked and like that it looked unique. Production.
There's a whole sequel to that that was just like, hey, remember the production design from Snow White and the Huntsman?
So there was
remember
reason.
Dripping Charlize Theron. Here's a whole movie of that.
Right, like the plot was the story was trash, but like there was reason to hope that this movie could be decent. Snow White and the Huntsman was not like a bad movie. It wasn't good, but it was like, oh, that was like visually
memorable. I thought it was boring.
It was, but it was visually memorable. There was a reason.
Unlike Ghost in the Shell, which was not.
I was not bored.
You're right.
I wasn't excited.
Honestly, the strongest praise I have for Ghost in the Shell.
Yeah,
I wasn't bored.
Are we just gonna get into it?
Like an hour and 40 minutes.
That's very true.
You're in and out. It's not like in Marvel or an Avenger, like Transformers, where you go and it's like 6 hours long and you're dead at the end and wish you hadn't gone. Like it's only an hour and 40 minutes. It desperately needs another like 20 minutes. Uh-huh. Desperately.
I think it just needs a rewrite.
Okay. So we saw live-action Ghost in the Shell after years of hype. They've been talking about this movie since the 90s, like the Wachowskis were going to direct it, and then someone else. Finally, it happens. Finally, they make a live-action Ghost in the Shell starring Scarlett Johansson and a bunch of other people. I want to know what you thought of the film, Jacob.
What I thought of the film... it was certainly an excellent pilot for an NBC sci-fi crime procedural that will be coming to NBC and then canceled after one season. That is not the way it looked. So to be fair, the production design is pretty lush. I would describe it as for every one thing I saw that was super that was super unique and cool. I saw two things that were kind of like shrug, not bad, but I didn't see one thing that was bad. There wasn't anything in the movie production design wise that I thought was ugly or rote or shitty.
I was pretty let down by the spider tank.
It was
not a good design.
No, but it was
lame.
It still
no imagination.
It
on that
still
tank.
Didn't look like fucking. Yeah, but that would fit into the two things I saw that were shrug, not like actively bad. I'm saying there was nothing in the production design that was actively bad, and that is kind of praise for the way that movies tend to look now, at least my opinion. Think about Power Rangers that just came out, and it's like, oh, you went with just like the most knockoff Transformers production design you could for any of it. Like, there's no joy in any of it.
Mm.
And this, like, Ghost in the Shell is dark, you know. It's dark, flat, grim, kind of dumpy aesthetic. So it's very easy for that to have gone in a direction of, I hate this and it hurts my eyes and I'm sad. But yeah, the worst it ever got was, well, that's kind of uninspired and you took it from another thing that I recognize immediately. But like, so if two-thirds of it is that, one-third of it looks genuinely cool. Like, that's really good production design. And besides that, the effects are, it doesn't ever look like bad or poorly done or whatever. Like, all the effects are, and that was true of Snow White and the Huntsman too, they're well integrated. It doesn't look like super fake and
there's flat. Some actor replacement CG that's not very good, but that's brief.
Yeah.
I cannot help but notice that shit. It's just what my eyes get drawn to.
Yeah, during the spider tank fight, yeah, there are moments where clearly ScarJo is a CG body.
And there are a few other places.
But I wouldn't say it's overwhelming. Again, I am comparing to current standard for blockbusters.
Otherwise,
it looks great. It looks pretty good, actually. Like, so the nicest thing you can say about the movie, it looks great for the most part.
I have other nice things to say about the film.
Okay, right.
Other nice things to say about Ghost in the Shell. Yes. I thought they nailed the relationship between Beto and the Major just fine. I thought they did, honestly, a great job with that relationship. There's a couple of scenes between those two characters that feel like Ghost in the Shell, that felt like I was watching Ghost in the Shell, whereas like a lot of the rest of it did not. But when those two were interacting, it's like, oh, yeah, you got it. That's how those two regard each other.
Yeah,
and it's this kind of mutual respect. It's a friendship you believe. It's a realistic, real-feeling friendship that you feel. And I'm sad that they had that, apparently didn't recognize it and didn't use it for all they could use it for.
Yeah.
But that was good.
The scene on the boat, yeah. Like, so the scene on the boat, if people remember the original film, for reasons we will get into very shortly, the scene on the boat has absolutely nothing to do with thematically or content-wise, other than the bare beats, with the original. However, the relationship between Beto and the Major, which is the most it's ever explored in either film on the boat, is like, even though they're talking about completely different things, and thematically and plot-wise it's totally different, the chemistry between them is basically the exact same as the original movie, in a good way. And I would say, we'll get into ScarJo later, but for Beto, I would say absolutely the best casting and acting in the thing.
I would say that Beto was fine.
Beto was, I would say, perfect.
Yeah.
I loved the way that he I forgot his name because it's like Swedish or something, so I have trouble.
Yeah, I can't remember. It's P something.
It starts with a P. Pilu Asbeck.
Yeah.
He was really, really, really a great Beto. And so that is my favorite thing about the movie.
Yeah, not writing and casting, but then again, if you watch most Ghost in the Shell stuff, that's the only character they give a shit about. That's the only one they bother to write.
Human,
it's the only one they bother to write. That's the only character they like give depth and like, you know, like
I would say
you could like Togas is just like a philosophical stand-in. Like he's there to make a point, not to be a character
or to exposit.
To exposit. And like all the other members of Section 9, aside from Aramaki, have like two lines.
Yeah, well,
and the only reason Aramaki is so central is because they cast Beat Takeshi as Aramaki, and so we better give him a bunch of scenes. Anyway, yeah.
Yeah,
if you're a fan of like Section 9, you are going to be let down.
Whenever people talk about Togusa, it's always baffling to me when people talk about Togusa's role in the original Ghost in the Shell. They talk about him as not necessarily the movie, more a standalone complex. He's barely in the movie, like you know, she's movie's barely in it. But like when people talk about his role, they usually say like, "Oh, he's the human center," and I'm always like, "What?" Like he has a completely human body, but apart from that, like he's not the emotional center of those movies. He is Captain Exposition Man and Philosophy Man.
No, like he's there to bounce transhumanist themes off of. You're
but
there
the
so
most
you can
human character is Beto, and has always been Beto.
Yeah.
So I don't, you know.
So just to run it down, the basic plot of this is it's the future, and they finally put a human soul inside of a robot body. A human brain inside a human whatever human consciousness. The untangible humanness has been placed inside a synthetic body. The synthetic body wakes up, and its name is for, like, Maya Angelou or something like that. I can't remember what her name is. It's that would be hilarious.
It's Mira. I don't remember her last name.
Sorry. Anyway, Mira. Her name is Mira.
Get it? Because Mirror?
Yeah, she's a member of Section 9. Their goal, you know what Section 9 does. And it's the basic plot beats of the film, the 1995 film Ghost in the Shell by Mamoru Oshii.
We want to emphasize the basic plot beats,
not as anything else.
If you pushed the mute button on your remote and just looked at the visuals of both, it would look like a fairly close remake.
Yeah.
If you turn the dialogue on, the story is completely different.
I would recommend not turning on the dialogue because it's
wildly
terrible.
Different.
The dialogue is fucking awful.
It's
that
really
script
bad.
Is fucking embarrassing.
It is.
We've woken you up, and now there's a ghost in your shell. A ghost in my shell? Yes, we've placed a ghost.
The human body. The shell. There's a pause. There's an audible
I'll always
pause.
Be here with you in your shell. In my shell? In your ghost that's in your shell. In the ghost that's in my shell? Like, saying it.
It's not literally like that, but it's pretty close.
You know what? That is
it's
not
like,
that far from
no,
it.
It's
there
not.
Are like five
your
points
point
in the
is
movie.
Valid.
There's like 5 points in the movie where they have long conversations with two characters saying ghost in the shell over and over and over again. And it's fucking cringy.
Yeah.
It's really cringy.
It's bad. Well, I'm just saying, like, if you're talking literal, people are wondering how literal that is. It's the literal version of that is a little more like, they'll be like, so you've awakened, and it's like, your body, your shell.
Yeah, one person says ghost.
Your soul, your ghost. They it's more like that. So it's not like, it's not cartoonish, but it is like,
Yeah, it's like, we've taken your soul. Otherwise known as a ghost.
Yeah.
And we placed it inside this android body. You might call it a show. Like, that's pretty much how it goes.
It's
so crazy. And then it does this kind of, it's all thuddingly obvious. So, like, I made a joke on Twitter that it was about as thematically complex as, like, Dragon Ball Evolution or Speed Racer. Yeah. And that's because the whole point of the film is pretty much too much technology bad.
Guns.
Justice good. And guns.
Good.
Guns and
good.
It's not like really saying that. Like, that's subtextual. It's
yeah.
not what the
to
film is
that,
actually trying
to
say.
To say that is the goal of the movie is wrong. It is the subtext created by too many Hollywood cliches in one place. So basically, the story is wholesale cliche. The theme of the movie, as stated, the major says it after somebody else. It's a dialogue callback. They just say the theme to your fucking face. Is our memories do not make us who we are. It's what we do in the present that makes us who we are. That is the stated theme of the movie. That is not what the actual theme is. The actual theme is your memories make up everything about you and get revenge on anybody who might have taken it from you.
Getting
with
revenge
guns.
Will close the hole,
with
by the way.
Guns.
Getting revenge, killing the people who wronged you will make things okay.
Yeah, and it's... Yeah, like, and so...
There's some vague stuff in there, like, really vague, like, an unfinished sentence about, like, finding purpose in your team
So the biggest betrayal, I guess, of the original source material in terms of, like, wow, you guys went... You swung the pendulum on the opposite end of what the original was trying to do or say is that they make a hard line between robot bad, human good.
Yeah.
And it's not about, like... What is humans? What is it?
Yeah,
what is the weight of a human soul when stuff gets cyberized? It's, oh, well, you're human no matter what. No matter what kind of robot parts we put on you, you're human. And robots don't have any kind of tie to humanity. There's no, like, I wonder if they're sentient. All of that's discarded. They're just robots. And, which is just not at all what the original was about.
Yeah.
And technology, like, encroaching that much on you is bad. Because, like, Bato, when he gets his eyes replaced... can't go see his dogs anymore because he's afraid that his dogs will be scared of him.
Yeah, I want to talk about the dog stuff in a little bit.
And it's like, ugh, no. So it's basically like technology bad, guns good. And like they have to live with technology because of the age. And at the end, the major's like, yeah, I'm going to live in this synthetic body and whatever. But like it is absolutely framed as technology is never like a good thing. It's just something that you live with because that's what the current age is. But you know what it is good? Getting revenge with badass guns. And even Aramaki has, like, an old-style revolver because it's like, oh, see, he's the good guy because he has, like, an old gun and not a future gun. And it's just Hollywood fucking cliches over a theme that doesn't match.
Yeah, I mean...
the original.
I don't know, like, so it gets through the plot beats, like, really quickly. Like, the movie moves along really quick. Like, to the point where the bad guy announces at the end, like, engage the spider tank. And I'm like, whoa, we're at the end of this movie already? Like, oh, unless happening in the middle.
That's
like,
the thing. Yeah, you're right. It isn't boring. It is not exciting. Those two things are, there's a gap between boring and exciting. It is not exciting. It is directed very pedestrian, like it's very, like, TV show or Netflix original directing.
Yeah, so, like, I made that comment, too. Well, a friend of mine, a fan of the show, I think, made the comment, like, it feels like a Netflix original. It's not really a slam on Netflix originals, but a lot of Netflix original movies look like they were filmed for television. If you watch a lot of movies, you look at it and you're like, oh, this looks good, but it kind of looks like a TV production. Like, it's staged and shot kind of like what you might expect from a TV show. And this looks like that for a lot of it. And I would say, like, the production design is really good, but the direction is not necessarily very good. It's just kind of...
It's not actively bad.
It's not bad. I just feel like he could have done more with what he had. Like, he could have had a lot more art to the direction. There could have been a lot more art to the direction. It didn't need to be so center of the frame all the time. Like, I was a little let down by how kind of... Boy, you have this giant visual playground, and what you're doing is putting the camera right in the middle of it.
But it's not boring because there aren't really any... Now, there are subplots that are underdeveloped, definitely, but there aren't, like, straight-up, like, superfluous scenes, except for one, which is literally, like, 30 seconds long, so it's not the same thing. But you're never allowed to be bored.
Yeah.
You're just not ever prompted to be excited either. It is a thing that exists and then goes away.
Yeah.
Made entirely out of Hollywood cliches, like, where it's a little more interesting just because they stole the aesthetic from the adaptation, which is more interesting than the cliches they're using. But the script is, like... just the most obvious, super hyper American westernized action movie cliches they could think of, with a Ghost in the Shell frame, keeping the vague plot beats, but they all mean something completely different.
Yeah, and they don't, and it's not necessarily that they mean something totally different. It's just that it's been dumbed down to the point where it is just the most shallow, surface possible interpretation of Ghost in the Shell, and like the most surface things that it was ever talking about. Like So, like, I talked about this a little bit last time, but Mamoru Oshii, in my opinion, makes movies that are defined pretension. Like, it is not a particularly complicated idea presented to you in a very complicated manner, as though it's this really difficult, like, deep, mysterious thing. But if you just sort of pay attention to the film, you can get what he's saying.
Yeah, perhaps I should clarify, like, I am not coming at this, like, I love the original, like, Oshii's
version. Yeah, you're not really.
And there are multiple versions of The Ghost in the Shell, but this is mostly a remake of Oshii's movie.
Yeah. That's what it's... like I said, I'll get to that stuff in a second. I did have something I wanted to say about that. But it's mostly a remake of that. So it gets to those plot points really, really quickly. And the experience was basically sitting there saying, like, is this going to say anything at all about any of that stuff? And the answer, of course, turned out to be no. It was blindingly straightforward. And I didn't expect to... I honestly would never have expected any Ghost in the Shell anything to be that straightforward. Like, the franchise always has this edge of mystery to it. Like, there's always kind of what's going on here in the center of it. Like, there's a little bit of mystery to it. There is no mystery to anything that is happening on screen. You are never confused as to who, anyone, what's going on, who, what their motivation is. You're a little confused as to why Scarlett Johansson is, like, reacting to things, because she doesn't have an emotional reaction to anything.
They fell into a trap, like, where...
Scarlett spends most of the movie play-acting as the anime character from the 1990s. Like, that's what she's doing. She's even, like... She's doing this, like Motoko does in the films. And, like, all of her physicality is literally copying the moves from the anime.
Yeah, I feel like...
Like, she palm-slammed a VHS into the VHS slot every morning and did all the moves before going to set.
Well, like, and I don't... You know, honestly, I don't want to blame her. I don't think that the casting was a portrait, apart from the obvious reason. If, ignoring the race thing, which is its own thing I'm sure we'll discuss later, but, like... Just talking about personality, I don't think that she was a poor choice it's, I think they trapped themselves because she is acting like the fairly emotionless. The reason the Major was emotionless in Oshii's movie is because she doesn't have, it's not about who was I before. It's like, I don't know what I am, period. Like, I'm not human or robot. I am this blank slate trying to find what makes me sapient and separate from either humanity or robot. So she acts like that. But her backstory is highly emotional, like, I know that I am completely human inside a completely robot body, but she doesn't exhibit basically, she copies the behavior of a character who has a completely different background and motivations from what we are told is hers in this movie, which is supposed to be, I'm a lost human girl inside this robot body. It doesn't match, so these two things don't match, so it comes across as very bad.
The twist at the end of this movie.
Oh, you don't want to know.
Anyway, so one of the things I wanted to talk a little bit about here was how I thought the film could have maybe been fixed. I feel like here's what the movie is missing. It's missing about 20 minutes of Section 9 antics where maybe they go on a mission. They could have even done this at the beginning, but they didn't. Yeah. They tried to. There's a few minutes at the beginning with Section 9 where they each have a couple of lines in this like round robin style, like, here's all the characters you remember from the anime and live action, and they get a couple lines each. But at the end of the movie, Scarlett Johansson is given the option of descending into the net with the bad guy, basically, or but she's like, no, I have to stay. We are never given the emotional motivation for Scarlett Johansson staying in this world.
I guess she liked Bato's basset hound.
If they'd spent time with Section 9 developing her, like, these are my teammate, the way that you feel about Section 9 in the Major when you watch like Standalone Complex, where they're a team and they have relationships with each other and you care about their friendships and you understand that they are motivated to help each other and they work as a cohesive unit. Like, half the story in every Ghost in the Shell thing is, oh no, Section 9 is going to get disbanded. We got to keep it together, guys. Yeah, like, that's the story. And you get into it because you want these characters to stay together. And they're all kind of like, they're a sort of classical ragtag team of mercenaries that do a job together.
Yeah.
This movie doesn't establish that. They throw out Section 9 because there's no time for it. I guess they figured in their hour and 40-minute long movie, there's no time for it. But if they had established that at the end of the movie, she would have said, no, I have to stay here. I have to stay here. Bato needs me. Togusa needs me. Section 9 needs me. I'm their leader.
Uh-huh.
Or I'm an incredibly important member of this team, and we're a team together.
Right.
None of that.
Uh-huh.
But there was this huge story opportunity just sitting right there. 15 minutes you could have done that.
Right.
Just a little more emotional connective tissue.
Nope.
We
have to open the movie the same way as Oshii's movie opens. Even though it doesn't really add to the you know, it's just a cool action scene. It doesn't add to, like, the emotional connection that we needed to make with those characters.
Make it so that in the opening scene, when she's invading the hotel and she's going in and the geisha bots are there, rewrite that so that each member of Section 9 plays an important role and helps her and she helps them.
Yeah.
No? Nope. Can't do that?
Nope.
No. Okay, anyway, that's how they could have improved that movie.
Yeah.
Otherwise, it's just Michael Pitt. We're not so different, you and I.
Yeah.
Glitch, glitch. I'm a robot man.
People were asking how Michael Pitt did. And
he's
it's
fine.
Like,
I love Michael Pitt.
He's fine. He has given nothing to work with, so he does quite well with a nothing character. It's like he has a nothing character, but he's trying.
He has like two scenes.
He's trying. You know, you feel the pathos a little bit for this guy, but like the character is just artistically bankrupt, so, you know, good on you for trying, man.
Yeah. So the other thing I wanted to talk a little bit about was the direction, and there are a small mountain of Mamoru Oshii references and Basset Hound shots in this movie.
Uh-huh.
And while I understand that me as a fan, I'm supposed to sit there and say, oh, look, hey, look, Basset Hounds, and I did the first time. The first time they showed a Basset Hound, I was like, all right,
I just like dogs for the sake
cool.
of dogs, so whatever.
After a while, the Basset Hound stuff really started ratcheting up, and at one point there's a giant Basset Hound hologram like in the skyline.
Uh-huh.
And I'm like, hey, that's Mamoru Oshii's directorial tick.
Uh-huh.
You don't just, it's not like a Ghost in the Shell thing. Don't just copy it. Like, you turn this into a weird cover band.
Right.
Not unlike
like not unlike the casting of the film. You put Scarlett Johansson in the main role playing this character that should have been played by a Japanese lady, directed by a white guy biting a Japanese director the whole fucking time. And, like, obviously trying to impress him.
Yeah.
The whole time. Like, obviously, look, here's all your stuff. Like, at one point, she pulls out a key, and it's for the Avalon Apartments. And, like, yeah, we know, oh, she's going to watch your movie, and, like, you really want him to respect you, bro. Like, it just felt a little... it bothered me. Like, it's too cover bandy. It's too, like, cover band.
The movie is pretty and dumb, like most Hollywood attempts at things that are not particularly inspired. That seem like made by committee and in production for hell for a while. It came out pretty and stupid. And, yeah, I feel like my ultimate take on the movie is, like, as a movie, is it a bad movie? No. It's not a good movie.
It's not bad. It's not. I wouldn't, like, recommend it.
No. It's not a good movie. Is it bad? No. Is it a good adaptation? No.
No, it's a terrible adaptation.
It's a terrible adaptation. Is it a bad movie? Nah.
No.
It's just kind of, you'll forget you saw it. Maybe you'll remember it because of the production design. But
like, even now, I feel like it's leaving
your brain.
It's exiting my memory. Like, we're going to finish this conversation, and then I'm just going to be like...
The biggest thing I can say against it in terms of, like, I wasn't expecting that and it kind of made me sad, is that Oshii's movie and Ghost in the Shell in general is notoriously not an emotional franchise. Like, there's almost no emotionality. And Oshii's movie, like, Stand Alone Complex kind of fuzzy and cuddly sometimes, but Oshii's movie is, like, bereft of emotion. It's devoid, I would say. Like, there's almost no emotionality in that movie.
Yeah.
However, there is empathy, which is there's two very different things. One thing that jumped out to me in the movie as I was watching it, and I was like, oh, that's very different in a way that kind of makes me sad and makes me think, oh, Hollywood. Like, this is a movie that ends with, like, the bad guy getting, like, the bad guy who is his only character is I'm a super over-the-top Yara Cupcake, like, evil military leader guy. Like, he has no nuance other than I'm super evil and I hate the human heart and I only like robots.
Yeah.
That's it. And he gets, like, dramatically shot by Beat Takeshi and they're like, yeah, vengeance. Like, that's how this movie ends. That's how fucking stupid and thoughtless it is. But, like, but as far as, like, yeah, empathy goes, the scene with the garbage truck man who is given this false background by the puppet master, in order to use him, basically.
Who they never call, like, the Laughing Man or the puppet, like, they don't use him.
The Laughing Man's a different...
Yeah. You would think they would use that, though.
You would think, but he's not the puppet master. They name him Kuze because he's, so people were asking, oh, is the villain the same? No, because they changed the story completely. The villain is, once again, just a human in an artificial body. He's not robot. So, like, in the original story, he's completely AI and trying to find his own place and stuff like that. No, he's just the same thing as ScarJo, which is, they took my totally human brain and put it in a robot body, and I was once a pure, innocent human soul, and now I'm robot bad.
It's a super
bad
warrior finding out that they tried to make super warriors before him, and now those damaged, fucked up super warriors want revenge. That's
yeah, and it's like, so no, he is. That's the reason he's not called the Puppet Master, is perhaps because they were like, oh, people get mad because Puppet Master was pure AI, and this is just another sad bro. So, anyway, point is,
He's had a rough life.
You know, I did enjoy watching him in that movie. Michael Pitt was trying.
Michael Pitt's a delight.
He is.
I recommend the film Funny Games for a tour de force performance. Watch with your family.
Yeah, no, don't do that. He's lying to you. Don't do that. Anyway.
Do not do that.
Not
do
with your mom.
Not do that.
Don't show it to your grandmama. Anyway, what I was saying was, the Oshii's movie is overflowing with empathy, even though there's no emotion. It's so the garbage truck man, that's the moment where it's revealed, like, okay, he doesn't have a family and all his family is falsely implanted in him and he's gonna have to live with that the rest of his life. And the major, you know, while showing no emotion on her face, she's deeply struck by that. And it, like, that's the turning point for her in the movie to kind of openly pursue finding her own identity, because she's kind of disturbed by this very sad thing that happened to this guy. Again, even though there's no actual sadness in the movie, like, it's important. In the Hollywood movie, when that's revealed, she's like, ugh, then he's useless, slams the door on him, and he hangs himself in the room, and they're like, let's go. And, like,
yeah,
no empathy.
And they basically,
no,
like, turn on the cleaner
and
hose.
Yeah. And it's shockingly devoid of empathy. Yeah. And it kind of made me sad. And it was like, yeah, like, you know, you don't have to be emotional. It doesn't have to be people crying or whatever. You can still make a really cold movie, but like, yeah, justice and awesome or whatever. And when she says at the end, I have to stay in this world or whatever, like, you don't feel it because you hadn't established, like, an empathetic connection. She can say, like, you know, I trust you, but I just don't like you, Bato, or whatever. And, like, you can still feel a connection there.
They don't even have a thing where, like, he's about to hang himself and someone goes, no! Yeah. That doesn't happen. Just everyone, like, just kind of, like, he does it and everyone's like, what?
Oh, well.
Oh, anyway, back to this sandwich I was eating.
Yeah, like, it's that movie, like, so I just wanted to point out, like, there's a big difference between emotion. You can still have a totally cold movie, because Ghost in the Shell is a cold aesthetic. Like, I don't expect it to be warm and fuzzy, but, and have, like, human understanding, because those are two different things, and this does not have the latter, which, you know, makes the lack of emotionality, you know, especially, it makes it just not stick with you. It makes you forget you saw it.
Yeah.
So that's my take, I guess.
So I do think Scarlett Johansson was miscast. Mm-hmm. Miscast.
Right. Well, if they were going to do
it. Not only was her performance, I thought, bad, she didn't really have the... Look, I don't... Maybe you're not supposed to say this shit, but she didn't have the build for it. She looked like she was, like, 5'3", and, like...
She was extremely muscular. I just...
She's, like, muscular, yeah, but, like...
And she had the ass.
Motoko's... All right, we're not arguing that, but, like, no one's gonna argue that, but...
She had the butt for Motoko.
Motoko's, like... I don't know, man. She's tall. She's, like, a little more statuesque. Like, ScarJo felt like she was trying to do it. Like, it wasn't natural to her. Mm. And I feel like they could have cast... Maybe a kick-ass Japanese lady with the right physicality.
I agree with you.
Could have been.
I don't want to pick on her for being short. She was muscular enough for the part, and she did the action scenes. Like,
all I'm saying is, you got the rest of this perfectly recreated, and then you have Scarlett Johansson there doing it, and it felt like cosplay.
My issue with her. My issue with her was not so much the physicality. Like, okay, I'm willing to accept that it was the acting, which I don't want to blame directly on her. I want to say it's due to the terrible script because it was shitty. Like. That character is fucking devoid.
Yeah, but the scenes where she was, like, trying to recreate the way it looked in the anime...
I think that's a live-action thing. I don't think that's
perfect. All right. I thought it looked awkward. I thought it looked awkward.
Oh, somebody's telling you that Motoko is supposed to be short.
Yeah, no, I know that. I almost stopped myself. I was like, she's shorter than everybody else.
I thought the look was totally fine. I thought the... Well, other than, you know, the fact that she's white, but, like, that's its own issue. So do we want to talk about the elephant in the room now?
Yeah, well, we can get to that. We should get to that, but we should mark spoilers. I'm not sure exactly how far we are into this. I think about a half an hour, maybe 35 minutes.
We will mark spoilers.
So the big stupid thing that this movie does is that Motoko Kusanagi is in the film. Scarlett Johansson is playing her. But it's hers. Motoko Kusanagi is the name of the Japanese dissident, like political dissident, that they installed inside Scarlett Johansson's body. So she goes to meet her Japanese mom, who's like, oh, that's that room over there that you feel strangely drawn to. Oh, that's Motoko's room. And she's like, oh, I feel such a weird connection. She's like, you're looking at me just like Motoko did. She's like, what? And then it turns out that what they did was they raided, like, a fucking coffee shop or something for, like, dissidents.
When we say political dissidents, we mean...
Anti-technology.
Yes, there is. So there's no established, like, well, how does the government work? Like, the movie's not really smart enough to delve into that.
Someone who wrote a blog that was like, fuck robots! Who they were arresting and putting into Android bodies.
They don't say what in the government they're rebelling against. It's just technology bad.
Here's my question, Jacob.
Uh-huh.
You're running a secret program to take people's souls and install them into incredibly expensive Android bodies. And then they become special secret kick-ass special agents, super cops, mm-hmm. Robocops, you might say.
Uh-huh. Yes.
Whose soul mm-hmm. do you think you would put inside one of those robots?
Well, I think I'm going to find approximately 17-year-old girl who talks about how technology is totally bad on her live journal. And
had you considered someone who is already a cop? I don't know. Or maybe a secret agent who gets shot in the line of fire, and then you have to put his soul into this android body because he's very valuable.
Or someone who doesn't hate technology with every fiber of their being.
Yeah, or someone who would be like, look at my awesome robot body. I'm going to push the limits of the human psyche with this thing. No.
Nope, got to get rid of
you
political
You capture
issues.
Protesters mm-hmm. and then insert their minds into... Erase their memories yep. because we can't have them... Why wouldn't you find someone whose memory you wouldn't need to erase?
Yes.
Why would you do it this way?
Because they started with...
Do you have any idea how you'd be able to find like people willing to do that?
Yes.
Yeah, sure. Put my consciousness in a robot
they
body.
They combined drafts of... Somebody was like, what about like if there's an anti-technology faction in some other draft of the script where it wasn't necessarily relevant. And then by the time they got to this one, they put that with this other thing and then it didn't make sense anymore, but they stuck with it for some reason. There's no anti-technology. Then, yeah. I mean, there is in Standalone Complex at some point, but there's no anti-technology message or bent to Ghost in the Shell.
No, there wouldn't, and there wouldn't be.
There wouldn't be because that's not what the fucking movie is about.
No, it's not anti-technology at all. And so that's the story. And like that aside, like that weird plot thing aside, aside from how dumb that is, it turns the entire movie into a retroactive justification for casting Scarlett Johansson because it's like, oh, see.
Fermian argument.
Bet you didn't see that coming. See, inside of her, there's a Japanese woman named Motoko Kusanagi inside Scarlett Johansson. See, so it's not whitewashing.
So
she's in there somewhere, but where?
So if there is, so let's pretend that there's a giant elephant in your living room. You're having a party, and there's a giant elephant in your living room, and it's taking a huge dump everywhere. And there's just it's this huge elephant in your living room, and you don't really know what to do about it. Here's things that you don't do. So your options are, you can embrace the elephant, you can, like, talk about how the elephant isn't so bad, you have a big conversation about how elephant shit is good for fertilizer or whatever, and basically if they had done that for this movie, it would have meant keeping that plot device or whatever, and then delving into, making it the entire theme of the movie, delving into how race affects casting and stuff like that, and the business side of it and everything like that. That would have been messy, and maybe ill-advised, but that's something that they could have done. The better solution, like, it's unless you're a real good writer, the better solution is to get up and move to another living room, is to leave the elephant behind and move to another room and stay in that room and have your party there and, you know, deal with the elephant later when you have to, but for now let's enjoy our party in another room, which is to say, cast a white woman, commit to it completely, have her name changed, and be like, this is a completely American story, we're just gonna say that this is the American Ghost in the Shell and just embrace it and do what we can with it, and we're gonna leave this other stuff to the side and acknowledge that there has to be a division there because of these issues. You could have done that. Obviously, could have cast a Japanese woman, but we're pretending that that option for some reason didn't exist to them, and they had to justify Scarlett Johansson's casting.
So the movie
here's
got,
the thing you don't. I'm almost done. So here's ahead. The thing you don't do. The elephant's still in there. Here's the thing that this movie chose to do. These are the other two options, they threw them out the window. They didn't do that. Here's what they instead chose to do. They instead chose to sit in there with the elephant and go like, elephant? I don't know. What elephant? I think it's perfectly nice. You don't smell anything, do you? Like, justify the elephant, basically. So this whole movie is a justification of the elephant.
Actually, it's like, more like
totally fine
you go the in there and there's an elephant and the whole place smells like elephant shit and there's elephant shit everywhere and the elephant is sitting on this coffee table and he's knocking shit over and you sit down on the couch and the guy sits down and he goes, hey, you know what? It's not even an elephant.
Yeah,
that's,
exactly.
That's what it is, and you're like,
you're right.
Oh, fuck saying, this, and fuck not, you, yeah. I'll see ya. Yeah.
It's like, well, technically, it's another kind of pachyderm.
Yeah,
it's really safer that it's here.
It's a different kind of pachyderm.
You justify, you're right. I used slightly the wrong thing, but I was coming up with this metaphor on the fly.
That's a good metaphor.
My
like
point
that.
Is, you're just the movie justified the elephant. It didn't ignore the elephant. It didn't, like, explore
it just made it the whole
elephant.
Point of the film.
Yes. You didn't ignore or explore the elephant. Two things that would have been better. You justified the elephant, which is embarrassing. It makes you look shitty. It's a bad idea. Don't do that.
Yeah.
And so that's what it is. It's this movie goes like, oh, it's okay that we cast a white woman because we justified in the universe of this film that it would be totally okay. They literally, if you've ever seen the movie Get Out, which was a huge hit here, they literally get out
it. That's about that, yeah.
The movie. In Get Out, I'm not going to spoil what happens in it, but in Get Out, they use an outlandish, over-the-top horror metaphor for
what happens in Ghost in the Shell.
So, liberal whitewashing, you might say. Like, it's more complex than that, but we're just going to say that without spoiling anything. Ghost in the Shell literally does this without irony, without acknowledging how stupid it is. And it's like, I just can't believe they did that.
Yeah, wow. It was really something. Uh-huh. I was laughing out loud, especially at the end when the final shot of the film is her visiting her ghost's grave with her Japanese mom. Uh-huh. And they're like standing there crying. And the grave, they're in a giant Japanese cemetery. Yes. It is a Japanese cemetery.
Straight up.
We saw plenty of them when we were over there. Standing in front of this, the camera pans around. All the graves are in Japanese.
Yes, everyone.
It pans up in English. In, like, fucking some fucking 1001 free fonts, it says Motoko Kusanagi in English.
In English on this.
And I, like, leaned over and I was like, what?
What?
So. Anyway.
Anyway.
Ghost in the Shell, not as bad as it could have been.
Not as bad as.
Nowhere near as bad as it could have been.
But.
In fact, like, if you're curious. You know, Redbox, Airplane, cable TV, yeah. Probably worth... It's only an hour and 40 minutes. I gotta be honest with you, I don't think the director did beat Takeshi, like, any favors. The way he shot his scenes, he didn't shoot Takeshi with, like, any bravado or anything. He just sat the fucking camera down. So you see a little old beat Takeshi holding up a briefcase, and he's struggling. Yeah. They got him in this oversized coat with this gun, and he's struggling, man. He's trying to get through those scenes. He's holding this giant fucking revolver. His whole body's recoiling. While they wanted him to look badass, and he does not.
Well, Aramaki isn't given anything to do in the movie anyway.
It's Araragi.
Araragi. Araragi. Araragi is fucking Bakemonogatari.
Somebody, I never get his name right.
Araragi.
It's Araragi.
Araragi.
It is. I was right the first time.
Yes, is the protagonist of Bakemonogatari.
All right, man.
I just thought it was really funny. You haven't seen Bakemono, so you don't know how like weird those two things in my head is now. But that's
yeah. But all of that aside, you realize we could be sitting here talking about just a fucking nightmare.
About Dragon Ball Evolution.
Yeah, about Dragon Ball Evolution. We could be sitting here saying, like, and then Krillin chose, or, like, cheese and nads, cheese and rice, my nads got scorched.
Yes.
Which is like, you recite that line. We could be talking about that, and we're not. It was, you know, competently directed, I guess. Whatever. You know what? Here's
a solid C+.
Here's a cool thing.
Uh-huh.
We probably don't ever have to talk about live-action Ghost in the Shell again.
It'll
after
slide
this.
Right off people's brains, yeah. Like butter.
Like, eventually they'll make more Ghost in the Shell anime. They will, mm-hmm. Of course. Like, there will be more eventually, but probably not another live-action. So, like, this movie cost about $110 million. That's the stated production budget, which is almost never what it actually cost to make the film. On top of that, you want to dump about $80 million in... promotion and advertising, P&A as they call it. That's probably way too modest for what they spent. This was inundated. I saw ads, and maybe I just noticed them because I saw it, but I saw them fucking everywhere, and they were covered Japan.
Yeah.
Japan was covered in Ghost in the Shell advertisements. Like, I don't even want to think about what they spent on advertising there. Uh-huh. It is currently set to open at about $25 million in the U.S., which is not good. Behind Boss Baby and the third weekend of Beauty and the Beast.
Right.
So that's not great. I can't imagine that that's the result that they wanted. It could have gone a lot worse for them, though. And it's not the worst start in the world. And, like, Deadline... one of the ways that you can kind of sort of figure out, like, how movies are being received is the way news outlets... or trades in Hollywood report on the box office. Ghost in the Shell is not being characterized as a major failure at $25 million. Mm-hmm. It was tracking at that this whole time. It's not a disaster. It's not good. But they're saying, like, look, overseas, like, really, really matters. And, like, there's, like, at least two Chinese film production financing companies that are front and center credited at the beginning of this film. So I would imagine its performance in China matters a lot. And I know that apparently Scarlett Johansson sells seats in China, so maybe it'll do really well over there. Right. I would imagine it needs to hit. But the thing is, though, is you look at that China gross, less than a third of that gets back to the States. So it can't do all of its business in China, but mm-hmm. worldwide matters a tremendous amount. Now, if it barely manages to hit $200 million worldwide, forget it. They bombed. If it gets just over 200 million worldwide, forget it. No good. If it hits something like 300, 400, 500 million worldwide, which it doesn't look like it's going to, then, you know, you might see them explore more along these lines. Right now, it's not really looking too good. I don't think it's looking too good.
That's the thing. It wasn't a bad
I don't think anyone's embarrassed. I don't think anyone's, like, embarrassed by this. Yeah. It's not, like, a fucking disaster.
And critically, it's doing, like, mixed.
It's not getting terrible reviews. Not terrible. Variety actually gave it a good review.
Yeah.
Which, you know, that counts for something. It's not, like, 20%. It's not, like, Boss Baby.
No, it's not bad. It's mixed is the word, you know.
Mixed. Basically. Mixed to negative.
Yeah.
I would say. And mixed leaning eh.
Yes.
Like, it's a lot of eh.
But, like, it's not a bad movie, but I don't ever want to see more of that because it was so dumb, right? I don't, there's no more to expect. Like, I don't want
to see more. If they made Innocence, it's like, Jesus.
Well, that would be, that would be baffling. They wouldn't that wouldn't touch happen. That, movie. That wouldn't happen. But, like, yeah, like, I what am I going to get more out of that? I already saw all of the aesthetic they had. That was the thing that kept me watching the first one, but. I can't anticipate a sequel on that because the story, there was nothing more to look forward to.
I mean, like, if they make another Ghost in the Shell thing, or if even if they're just like, okay, live-action anime adaptations, do we keep making these? Do we keep going down this road? This felt like a surefire thing, but they haven't touched the stuff that would actually make money over here, like a Pokemon movie or a Naruto movie or a Death Note movie, which would do really well. If someone had the fucking stones to make Code Geass, might actually do okay. Like, that might actually do okay. It's sold in numbers to well. It might actually do okay.
Yeah, but super duper.
I could see it like a Netflix thing. Like, I could see that as a Netflix thing. But those are the properties where, like, because Ghost in the Shell is old. It's for old times.
I'm still holding out for HBO Fate and this alligator.
HBO Fate? That would be good.
That would be so good.
That would be really good. Especially if it was set in America and they had, like, American. Yeah, I would like that.
Yeah.
That would be good. Okay, we did get some questions for our Ghost in the Show here.
Ghost in the Show.
Yeah, let me pull those up. I think I got them on my phone, actually. One second. Sorry about this. Let me just get here. There we go. Okay. Cyber Mormon wants to know, how well does Ghost in the Show need to do in China to get a sequel? If it grosses, like, so this isn't unheard of. And, like, look at, like, Pirates of the Caribbean. The fourth Pirates of the Caribbean movie kind of tanked in the U.S. It did not do well. It had a bad opening. It had kind of a poor opening weekend. It got really, really bad reviews, and it dropped off the face of the earth after, like, 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
It did huge in China, like, 300 million, 400 million just in China. Mm-hmm. So they're like, well, we have to make another one. Mm-hmm. We have to. If this does those kind of numbers over there, like Warcraft, erasing your problem in the United States kind of numbers, yeah, I don't know. Maybe you might see more. I don't know. I don't think so. Also from Cyber Mormon, if you or Jacob could have one part of your body augmented, what would it be? So for me, the answer is obvious. My eyes would definitely get my first thing, eyes fixed right away. I want to see, like, super long distances and, like, never have to worry about glasses or contacts or anything. That's the first thing that comes to mind. Jacob, what about you? I suppose the answer is obvious. Anyway, maybe we should move on.
Let's move on.
All right. The Master 2000 wants to know, Jordan Peele maybe directing Akira. I don't think Jordan Peele is going to direct Akira, guys. I think Warner Brothers is floating that as a they're courting him. They want him to work for them. And I think maybe they heard he was interested in Akira, so maybe
like
they're offering
a tropical bird dance in the rainforest.
Yeah,
there.
Like Jordan Peele will wind up directing, maybe wind up directing some giant thing at Warner Brothers, maybe not. But that's sort of the game they play. It does make you think about what would it be like if Jordan Peele directed Akira, and like I would be really interested in seeing that. But having seen Get Out, I feel like Akira is an aesthetic exercise more than a lot of other things, and Jordan Peele's talent appears to be largely in the storytelling and he's a very workmanlike director. And there were some interesting visual things going on in Get Out, but not to the point where I would say, give this man Akira. Like,
give this man a story that is absolutely driven mostly on aesthetics.
Yeah. Yeah. I wouldn't, I'm not sure I would necessarily do that. Not only that, but, I would want to know what the script for that is going to look like regardless of who's going to direct it. Like, what is that script? Is that something you can just hand to anybody? Or is this, like, Now you need an aestheticist who's going to come in and like be obsessed with light trails on the back of motorcycles and shit.
Well, short of Dragon Ball, Dragon Ball being like more why, Akira is the most why thing that has been prompted for live. Like Ghost in the Shell, really good.
No, it's
good
not
for
why. It's not
Akira. Why would you make an American version of Akira?
To make money.
Yeah. No, I mean like I don't. I'm not talking about why would business people. I'm talking about why artistically this will not translate, period. It will not be a good movie. Like, Akira, to me...
That's your opinion.
Yes, that's my opinion. Yes, all of this is our opinions, but
I'm but I mean, you say it like it's... Well, everyone would know this, if I were an artist and I were offered, hey, you might be... You could film a live-action Akira, I would say, like,
I have a harsh tone, but it's just my opinion. I'm talking about things that I think would translate well to both America and live-action, and... Apart from Dragon Ball being the worst example that's been picked so far, Akira is number two in terms of this is very Japanese and this is not really going to work in live action. I would say, yeah. So that's one of those where it's like, whatever happens, because I just don't think it's going to be... Ghost in the Shell was a very good pick for both live action and American version of, at least I thought. But it was this version was too dumb, but, you know, whatever. It could have been so much worse, like we said, so.
Yeah. Let's see... Jack Brown wants to know, would you still be excited for an Akira or Nausicaa live action?
No, Nausicaa live action. No, it's not.
Okay. It's hypothetical. Knowing Hollywood has the ability to capture the visual identity of these works, but will water down the storytelling. Well, I can rest easy knowing Miyazaki will probably live into like his 90s and would never let them make a live action Nausicaa that did not have his total stamp of approval. I doubt he would let them do it in the first place.
He didn't do it at all.
They let him make Kiki's. They let him make Kiki's Delivery Service. In Japan, there's a live-action Kiki's Delivery Service.
Well, that's
service,
different from America.
Which is different from America and also not Nausicaa the Valley of the Wind. Like, Kiki's Delivery Service could very easily be turned into live-action without batting an eye. Like, it's basically, you know. But, I mean, if this is what it's going to be, like, look, it looks like the thing. Mm-hmm. The story isn't really... anything like the thing that you remember, but you know it looks like the thing. That's you go to the multiplex, you go to the 7 p.m. show on Thursday, you sit through it. We come and do this. That's it.
No, as far as is if
there's nothing to think about, nothing to chew on, nothing to appreciate, nothing to remember.
If literally every live action anime adaptation going forward was at the quality of Ghost in the Shell and no higher, I would be fatigued. But not, like, disappointed and embarrassed for anime fans. Like, Ghost in the Shell is not an embarrassing movie to show people and be like, ugh, that must be what anime is like. It's not like that. It's like, oh, that was a forgettable sci-fi film. Like, shrug. Which, to me, means it's already kind of surpassed video game movies, because most of those are embarrassing at this
point. Yeah, they're not offensive.
Yeah. What's the least offensive video game movie? Prince of Persia. Is Ghost in the Shell better than Prince of Persia? Yeah. So, you know. Okay. I don't mean offensive, like, morally. I mean, like... P.U.
Yeah.
You know.
Like an offensive odor.
Yes.
Eber's Choice wants to know, after all the hype, anti-hype, coupled with weird ratings the film is getting, it's split, mixed reviews, leaning negative. Yeah. What happens if it breaks even? It breaks even.
Yeah.
Will we have to revise our thinking for the film? No. It's still deeply flawed work. Is it still a deeply flawed work, but what if, after all its missteps, it succeeds? Box office does not mean anything about the artistic value.
Do you know how much Transformers makes?
Yeah.
A bunch of money.
Transformers movies make more money than most other kinds of films. They're fucking unwatchable.
They make more money than God, and I can't sit through, like...
No, God makes more money than Transformers.
How do you know? Have you asked him?
There are books about how much money God makes. They make a lot more money than Transformers. Anyway, but yeah, like, it doesn't have anything to do... Like, we wouldn't have to be like, maybe we were wrong. Maybe it was great if it made $350, $400 million at the box office. That has nothing to do with my opinion of the film.
Uh-huh.
None whatsoever. Let's see. Overdouble wants to know, is Cyberpunk seeing a resurgence? Can the live-action Ghost in the Shell, the new Blade Runner... revive Cyberpunk? Well, so I was thinking about this the other day, and like, there's been a lot of discourse about Cyberpunk and whether or not it has any value anymore. And like, I never saw Cyberpunk as like, this is actually about our real future. It's just another fantasy setting.
Yeah.
What I don't understand is why they don't go analog with all the tech and make it super cool. Like, why weren't the characters in Ghost in the Shell handing each other little floppy disks? That would have been fucking great.
Because this is...
Everyone would have loved it. It would have been super cool. Like, have an analog cyberpunk future. Maybe Blade Runner will have that. Actually, I hope it does. Like, but it's a fantasy Hollywood. Setting. It's not, like, relevant.
That's not how they think. They're going to be like, well, if we use old tech...
This is like our world.
It'll exclude the youngs if we use old tech they don't recognize.
Yeah, no, it's fantasy. It's like a sword or a shield. Not,
yeah, but for a huge Hollywood picture, no.
Nah, you get the... Plug wires into the side of your head and like tap on a phone thing, and then purple stuff goes. Yeah, come
not
on.
That much imagination is not allowed in these kinds of projects that we're talking about specifically.
Analog tech, cyberpunk. That's what you want.
It would be cool.
Make it like 19, cool, like not like happen. Exactly circa 1987 Shadowrun.
That would be cool.
Just thinking about that makes me so happy. Oh, that'd be so good.
Nope, not gonna do it.
I mean, take all the shitty, like, racist Orientalism out of Shadowrun first, and then make that movie, yeah.
They're not gonna do it, but, you know.
All right, Kaylin Evergreen, I already know your answer to this. Which was better, Beauty and the Beast live action or Ghost in the Shell live action? Well, Jacob obviously thinks Beauty and the Beast is better.
No, I don't. Yeah, I honestly don't. I don't clearly. Have an immediate answer for that. I think they're both...
Ghost in the Shell was better. Beauty and the Beast made me angry. Ghost in the Shell was like, whatever.
I can't say... I mean, I'm ignoring, like, my affection for whichever franchise and how that might affect, like, feelings-wise, like, in terms of just, like, the quality of the movie and the script and stuff like that, I don't know that one was better than the other. They were both pretty, like... What?
Beauty and the Beast was 2 hours and 9 minutes long.
You're right.
And made me actively fucking pissed
shorter.
Off.
So
actively
Ghost
pissed off during several
Ghost
of
Ghost in the Shell is better because it was shorter. That is my answer.
Did Ghost in the Shell ruin the Gaston number? No, it didn't. Did Ghost in the Shell wreck one of the best Disney songs ever written? No, it didn't.
Ghost in the Shell made its entire movie revolve around a fucking Thermian argument to justify a whitewashing choice, and it completely shat all over the...
Now you're like on Twitter.
Movie.
This is the response I get on Twitter.
Well,
excuse me.
It's true. It has the message of...
You're right.
The Hollywood movie, like, if you care... I don't even care that much about the original Ghost in the Shell. It's okay. Mamoru Oshii Ghost in the Shell. It's okay. But, like... but this movie absolutely, like, just took a big old dump on what that original movie was about. 100%. So if I cared more about it, I'd be way more angry, I think.
Well, that's... Yeah. Anyway. My favorite Ghost in the Shell stuff is Standalone Complex.
Same.
And the manga's pretty neat. The original manga's neat. Mm-hmm. It's cool and old. And it has kind of that analog sort of sensibility.
Yeah.
I like that. I like the way Shiro draws tanks. Mm-hmm. So does he. do we have any questions?
I would hope so.
He loves to draw tanks. do we have any other questions today from the chat? We're just about wrapped up here for our Ghost in the Shell show. Ghost in the Show. Anything from the chat? How about those Standalone Complex US Blu-rays? I mean, I haven't bought them. I heard there's a huge fucking problem with them. And that they're being really obstinate or weird about it. Mm-hmm. Keep on them, I guess. That's kind of the only thing you can do. Right.
Which is more entertaining?
That's a good question.
Or Lucy.
What's more entertaining, Ghost in the Shell or Lucy? So we were talking about Lucy a little last night because we saw this last night, and you mentioned Lucy, and I was like, oh, I hadn't put it together that it's entirely positive because Ghost in the Shell absolutely 100% definitely got made because Scarlett Johansson was attached to it. Mm-hmm. The thing is, I was thinking like Scarlett Johansson, like she doesn't open movies, but Lucy was a huge unexpected success that is kind of in the same line as Ghost in the Shell.
Yes.
So notably, Disney.
I'm thinking this got made because Lucy was a big hit.
Well, Disney picked up the ball on Ghost in the Shell for a while.
Yeah.
And that was right after Lucy was a big success. Mm-hmm. So that got the ball rolling, and then I guess they were far enough through because Disney didn't want to make it anymore. So DreamWorks, Paramount picked it up, or DreamWorks is making it. Paramount picked it up. Mm-hmm. For distribution, and that's how it worked. But I hadn't really connected those. That like, oh, Lucy's box office success, and Lucy was fucking in it. You should see that movie if you get trashed and watch it with your friends on a Friday night.
Yeah, to answer the so this was our thought process, and we kind of came up with this connective line where we assume Ghost in the Shell was made because Lucy was a success in part. But to answer the actual question of which is more entertaining, Lucy is wildly entertaining, even though it's stupid as hell.
Oh, it's so dumb.
Like, Ghost in the Shell, we were like, this is stupid, but I meant this is stupid in terms of this is a stack of Hollywood cliches. Lucy is uniquely the dumbest thing in the world.
Yeah.
Like, super, holy shit, this is so dumb that I'm, like, laughing my ass off. Like, that movie is wildly entertaining and incredibly stupid, and please go watch it if you love irony watching things, because it's fabulous. The best part is there's a moment where Scarlett Johansson stares into the middle distance. She's on the phone with somebody. She stares in the middle distance, and then she looks down, and she says, I can feel my brain. And
it's a good movie.
I can feel my brain.
Lucy's a good movie.
Luc Besson is fun. Anyway.
I can't wait for Valerian.
Yeah, that's gonna be crazy.
Every trailer is a new trailer in front of Ghost in the Shell. It's like, oh, just give it to me right now. I want that shit so
crazy,
bad.
Crazy weirdo. Give
the
us
the Fifth
more
Element
of
is like still my favorite fucking thing in the world, and that movie looks like The Fifth Element too, and I want to see it so bad. Let's see here. What do we think of Arise? I never watched Arise. The concept of a Ghost in the Shell prequel-y type of thing didn't seem fun or interesting to me at all. And frankly, all the reviews were really lukewarm.
Yeah, everything I ever heard said about Arise was, eh. So I never checked it out.
Yeah. It seems like they made that because it's like, we haven't made a Ghost in the Shell thing in a little while. Uh-huh. So,
yeah.
Here you go. Let's see here. Do we have any other questions? Ultraviolet or Ghost in the Shell? You're coming up with good movies to compare it to.
You are, actually.
Ultraviolet is more entertaining. Ultraviolet's fucking crazy. If you haven't seen that movie, you should see that, too. You could actually put
the worst screen screening you ever did see.
If you had a triple feature, Lucy, Ghost in the Shell, Ultraviolet, Ghost in the Shell would be the least interesting of those three. The least fun, the most straightforward, but you still would not be bored.
Yeah,
you would still not be bored.
You would still not be bored. You would just be more bored than the other two. But it would be a better script, but you'd be more bored.
Someone mentioned how are the action scenes in Ghost in the Shell. Surprisingly, not that many of them. Mm-hmm. But there's not that many action scenes in the original Ghost in the Shell.
Basically, imagine Oshii's movie, same amount of action scenes. The action scenes last about the same amount of time.
But it's a shorter film.
But everything in between, instead of philosophy, everything in between is like dumb dialogue that's just telling you the most obvious plot beats.
There's a ghost? You're telling me there's a ghost in your shell? In my shell? Well, we call it, it's your body. It's your android body. But we call it a shell. Uh-huh. A ghost, you say? Like, that's...
Yes, yes, yes. We got it. But yeah, but surprisingly, not more action than the Oshii art movie. Like, Oshii's like, art movie with action scenes, and this is like, dumb movie with action scenes.
Somebody mentions Aeon Flux. I would definitely watch Ghost in the Shell over Aeon Flux. Aeon Flux was fucking horrible.
Yeah.
Just the worst. Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. Actually, I think that just about wraps us up. Okay, chat. Thanks for coming by. Sorry the show was on a weird day. We wanted to make sure we could discuss the show, the movie this week, because next week, definitely no one's going to care. This is already too late. Like, this is too late. Yeah. Like, we should have done it last night, but... What are you going to do? Anyway, everyone, thank you very much for dropping by. We will see you all next week. Preview guide starts tomorrow. So keep an eye on the front page of Anime News Network. Attack on Titan, My Hero Academia, Grand Blue Fantasy is also coming out tomorrow. It's new anime time, everybody. Okay, so we'll see you all tomorrow. Thanks, everyone, for stopping by. All right, take it easy. Okay, that's our show. Big thanks to everybody for stopping by. The theme song is Bucharest. It's by the band The New Division. You can check them out at newdivisionmusic.com. Don't forget, subscribe to us on iTunes. Leave us a rating, a review. We'd really appreciate it. And I'll see you all next week.